Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today we have two guests in studio, which is unusual, Mike Cantu and Tony Alvarez, both of them very successful local investors. Both of them have taken on the training side of the business, and so we welcome both of you to our show. What's nice about this is I get two responses to the same question. So, Tony, how'd you get started in real estate?
Well, I started back in 1981, and I was an infomercial junkie watching all the guys on TV late at night, and then I got in, actually became an appraiser. And then from there, I started buying little houses over in Burbank, and just went on from there to do apartments and a whole bunch of other stuff. But I really, what I really credit with really getting me, giving me an edge, so to speak, was the fact that I became an appraiser.
Okay, you're able to analyze not just a home, but in markets that helps you.
Yeah, it trained me. I mean, one of the things I always try to tell people is if you ever get a chance to look at an appraisal form, which I think all investors should, you know, at some point, you look at the front part of that appraisal form, it gives you just about everything you really need to focus your attention on when you're out there, you know, looking at stuff from the neighborhood, you know, the property, and then you turn the back, and then you go to the comps, and, I mean, that's as good a training as you're ever going to get, you know.
Mike, how'd you get started?
Similar story to Tony. Early 1982, I was watching a late-night infomercial, channel surfing, and they were interviewing a young guy sitting on a surfboard. He was out in the water, and I recognized the beach in the background, and a good friend of mine lived there in an alley, not on the beach. But what the surfer and I had in common, he says, I'm a 20-year-old loser. And I thought, I can relate to that. I got that part down. Then he said a year later, he was worth $1 million. I fell for that story hook, line, and sinker. That night, a dream was born, and I've been full-time real estate ever since then.
That leads into a second question, and that's you might have already answered it, but at what point did you set a goal to become wealthy? We'll go back to you, Mike.
That night, I took a whole bunch of notes. I went to the freebie promotion for the weekend seminar. I went with my roommate, Chuck. And we put our money together, went to that seminar that weekend, and I already had written goals prior to going there. After the weekend, I revised the goals upward, substantially upward, and I still have that original goal list.
Your first goal was pretty modest, as I recall. It had nothing to do with real estate.
Yeah, the first goal I wrote down was paying the $40 balance. I made a $20 deposit to get my four retread tires off layaway at J&J Tires. And that was for my 1960 Ford Falcon with no upholstery or windows.
You know, I think it's important, really, especially when you're training people. People are looking at a finished product right now. And it's almost intimidating, you know, when you start talking about, okay, we own X amount of free and clear houses and all that, and they can't even imagine owning one. And I guess, in a way, how important is goal setting to escaping your reality and dreaming out there? You know, that's, in essence, what we all started with was we're not here. We want to be there. So goal setting, how important was that?
Goal setting is the most important part. Without a plan, without some goals, you're just going to wander aimlessly. I've always had very specific goals. Fortunately, I was exposed to the power of goal setting as a young man. Once again, I'm a very optimistic person, so when I read something that sounded good, I believed every bit of it. And I have spent the better part of my life having a stack of 3x5 cards that get reviewed twice a day. Every day, I have a goal book. There's pictures in it. There's dates, very specific stuff. And I've been very, very goal-oriented once I saw the power of goal setting and watching the goals come to life. When you set goals like that, you're programming your subconscious mind to do stuff that you don't realize all day long. You're chipping away, plugging away, getting towards those goals because you set the goals, you're passionate about it. And looking back, you think, wow, a lot of stuff happened, but I got to where I wanted to be just because the goals were set. I know that there's studies. There was a Harvard study years ago where they interviewed a graduating class. And then they track down that class 20 years later, and the people that had written goals, 3% of them, their combined net worth was several times more than the other 97%.
Mm. Tony, do you approach the business as far as goal setting and becoming wealthy? When did you first think, you know what, I think I can do that?
Well, you know, the goal setting part actually was part of my second time around in real estate. I had a first time in the 80s, and I crashed and burned at the end of that.
Okay.
And that, I have to say, was mostly by persistence, determination, and accident, you know. But the second time around was definitely about having specific goals. But the one thing that I wanted to inject into this was, and I learned this through just living my life, my initial goal after I came out of bankruptcy in 1993, when I went out to the Antelope Valley, was to get to $1 million and $10,000 a month in income. That was a big goal for me because I didn't even have an automobile at that point. I was working at Shakey's, you know. But, you know, I went blowing right past that goal, you know, just by sticking to what I was doing in the market being there for me as well. And I ended up, you know, doing 10 times that much as far as the equity part, and my income got up to somewhere around $55,000, almost $60,000 a month. So what I learned was a goal sometimes can be somewhat limiting. Because we set a target for ourselves, and we don't really see what our potential really is. And just to add one other thing to it, for example, I made almost I'd say 100% of the funds that I made during those 7 to 10 years out in the Antelope Valley, I made from working with REO agents, you know, and buying REOs. But from you guys, I learned something later on about doing the little direct mailers to absentee owners and stuff. And I had done a little bit of that before that, but I never looked at it as a serious business, okay? Mm-hmm. And I realized that my numbers would have been way higher had I been paying attention to that, because some of the highest profit deals that I ever made came as a result of those direct mailers that I learned from you guys.
I guess that brings up another point, that it's important to recalibrate, because
yes,
when you're starting, I mean, let's talk about what defines wealth for you, Mike.
Freedom to do what I want and live life on my terms.
And that really can happen. That happened much sooner than, let's say, the wealth you've accumulated. In other words, you've had that feeling for quite some time. And that, when did you first realize, okay, I actually have attained that first level that I maybe thought would never happen, but here it is. When did you go, wow, I did it?
That was somewhere back around the year 2000, and I realized that all the parts were there. I had all the pieces and parts necessary. I just needed to assemble them, put the pieces of the puzzle together, get rid of some stuff, pay off some stuff, but I had enough parts to move around and get free. And that was it.
You know, 19 years we're talking, or 18 years from the infomercial to that day. Most people, you know, they want it to be much quicker than...
I had planned on much quicker, but I had always figured I was the exception to the rules of the universe. There's universal laws out there, and they applied to everybody except me, and I could take some shortcuts, and that resulted in what I call the wrong dance step. It was 3 steps forward, 2 back. 3 forward, 2 back. If I could have eliminated the 2 back, it would have been a long time before that, but then I would not have learned all that I learned from the mistakes that I made. I've learned much, much more from my mistakes than I ever had from my victories, because we go into this planning to win, expecting to win, and you take it for granted. But when things go wrong, that's when you really analyze what happened, check under the hood, get underneath it, and approach it from all angles so that you don't repeat that mistake again.
Tony, did you have that day where you went, wow?
Well, you know, it's funny. As Mike was speaking, I was thinking back to one feeling that I always had, because, you know, we weren't born in this country. I came from Cuba, and so we grew up a little different. We're the only Spanish-speaking family in the New England neighborhood, and, you know, and we had to deal with a lot of different things. Survival for us was the name of the game. So you develop certain personality traits, I think, to deal with all that, which served me in business now, have been probably at the core of the whole thing, you know, for me. But overriding, there was always an overriding feeling that I was never really poor, so to speak. Even though I was not able to buy the penny loafers like everybody else, I had the black tie shoes and that kind of thing. What's been crucial for me probably most of my life, because I don't live a very, I mean, you see me in jeans and stuff. I'm a pretty simple person. And Mike mentioned freedom. In a sense, it is freedom at the core of it. But what it is I have a feeling of my peace of mind. I work very hard at retaining it. So it's almost a reversal of that. It's there's a certain level of freedom, yes, but overall I call it my peace of mind. I don't want anything coming at me. I don't want to have to get up and go to a job. You know, and I remember working at Great Western Bank and thinking to myself, the only job I can ever do in this bank is as an appraiser, because we would go in the morning, check in, they gave us a company car, and then here's your jobs, and we were out the door free to go, and we didn't basically have to come back, you know. So that for me represented, yeah, you know, in a sense it was freedom, but to me it would be torture if I had to go to a job. I don't care what the paycheck is, that I would have to do this every day, every in and out, in and out, in and out, without being able to call my own shots.
Yeah. I think control is, for me, certainly, of your family's destiny,
yes,
too.
Yes, yeah.
That feels very bad to feel I have lost control of being able to take care of my family or take them through the experiences I wanted them to have in life. That feels very threatening at this point, to lose that after you've had it. And a lot of people we know have. You know, right. They thought they were there.
We take a lot for granted, I think, when we succeed at any one thing for any length of time. You know, we just assume that the wheels are going to stay in motion in this direction and nothing is going to change. And, you know, that's the one lesson I've learned over the years is the one thing you can rely on is absolute change, and probably at the moment that you least expect it.
You know, it's interesting. Free and clear real estate, I mean, there's a lot of heat that's given to that statement by people that are, I mean, just people. I can't tell you how many times people you own your house free and clear. Sort of like, why would you do that?
Yeah,
you can borrow money at 5% and do this and leverage this. And it's always being told to me by somebody that doesn't have anything, though.
Yeah,
I like to dumb proof stuff because I tell everybody there's nothing in this world I can't screw up. Bring it to me and I'll show you 10 ways to make a mess out of it. And after messing up endless real estate deals, I sat down one night and I thought, how can I dumb proof this to where even I can't goof it up? Yeah. And it just kept coming back to a well-located single-family house in a good neighborhood, good school district with no debt on it, and a family with kids and lots of stuff. Once they get in there, load that garage up, get their schools locked into the system, it works. Yeah. And that has become my model. I have tried just about everything under the sun there. But Bruce, back to the comment you made about what is wealth, and after listening to Tony's answer, I agree with that I refer to it as the three currencies of life. Most people think of just money as currency. We also have money, we have time, and we have serenity. That's the peace of mind Tony talked about. You can have the first two, and without the third one, what's it all about? That's what matters to me most at this point in time, quality of life, and how do I feel about my day-to-day activities. And I heard as a young man that most men lead lives of quiet desperation. They act like they have it together, but inside, they don't have that peace and serenity. Once I got a hold of that, I thought, that's something I never want to let go of, and every day I work to maintain that.
Let's go back to the boom years of, say, 85 to 89. I mean, mm-hmm. you had a little experience. Both of you guys started in the early 80s,
yeah.
and all of a sudden, we got this kick in equity. Everything you owned turned into gold. And
yeah, there were no idiots at that time.
That's right. You know, that's the thing. You do go through those stages where you really start patting yourself on the back going, I am a real estate genius. But really, during those years, what were you doing and how well were you doing, Mike?
In the 80s, I was still on my learning curve. I started the business in April of 1982, and through the mid-80s, when the market picked up and things were hot, I went through houses. I started building houses. I went into development. I still continued to do the single-family house, but somewhere around 87, I decided that Donald Trump better just watch out because I was going to knock him off his perch, and I was going to be a big developer. That was my plan. I thought, I am smarter than I look when I look in the mirror there, and things have gone well, and I didn't know anything about real estate cycles. I thought it would never end, and the end result of that was it was musical chairs, and when the music stopped, I was standing.
Okay. But we had a very successful run, and somewhere in there you thought, okay, this will never change.
I had a good run. I wouldn't say it was super successful, but it was a lot better than I had expected.
Okay. And what were you up to, Tony?
Well, I did very well. I started in 1980s, like I mentioned, as an appraiser, and I really did that because I wanted to become an investor. The investor thing bug caught me first, mm-hmm. and then I went searching for a way to be able to identify value and all that. And I learned a lot while I worked in house at the banks, primarily because I looked through all their files. Great Western is no longer with us, and I think Glenn Fed is also gone, so I'm okay to say that. But I used to study up. I used to study how how they did their, you know, how they qualified people, how they, you know, who were their top clients versus their other ones, you know, the ones that they, you know, didn't care about so much. And, you know, I took all that knowledge to the street. I did a lot of stuff with single families. Then I went into apartments, and I learned that by appraising. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a certified general appraiser, so I learned that by appraising stuff for other investors. I saw the kind of money they were making with other units, so I went, you know, I went that way. I made a lot of money in the 80s. I was also taking down around $200,000 a year in appraisal fees. That didn't hurt. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got to the end of that cycle, I couldn't wait to quit both. Okay, that's how I felt. I was completely burnt out because it was all about the money, mm-hmm. and I didn't care if I had to step on somebody else to get there. If I had a, you know, I had very few friends during that era. I have to tell you that.
Okay.
But when I got to the top, I decided, okay, I'm out of this. I really wanted out, and I took all my money, put it into another business. Handed it to someone else who had absolutely no knowledge. I don't know what the hell I was thinking, but I promptly lost it all. So I ended that whole run with having gone through a tremendous amount of money. By the way, I also want to make a point that during that time, I was spending probably $1 more than I earned every month, regardless of the amount. Okay? There always seemed to be, it didn't matter if I made $200,000 or whatever the heck it was. I was on zero. My tank was on empty. So there was another lesson. When I hit bankruptcy and I lost my car and I had to walk home from L.A. Courthouse to Burbank, I had a lot of time to think and figure out what am I – not what did I do wrong, but it was a series of questions of what will I not do again.
What year was that?
That was 1993.
93. Yeah. Okay. Mike, after the run in building and, like you said, the music stopped, what did you own at that point that caused discomfort for the next couple of years?
A bunch of land, a bunch of half-finished houses, big subdivision, a couple of condo projects that weren't quite finished yet. And one of the biggest lessons I got from that whole thing was no matter how well you do, you can lose it. But what I didn't realize is you can go flying right past zero and gain momentum. You can actually gain some speed as you're going into the negative. And I always thought when you lost it, it was over and you just started from scratch. I had no idea that you could create a huge hole that you have to dig yourself out of.
All right, I'll bring up a point. Not everybody chooses to dig themselves out. They choose to walk away. I mean, you're now teaching. And you see those people come up. I've had people come up and brag to me. I've had a rental that I've rented for 15 months. I haven't made a payment. No one's chasing me. You know, and it's almost with a stamp of pride. You know, how can I do this 10 times or something? You owed a lot of money that was very difficult to pay back, and somehow you and your partner, Mick, decided to pay it back.
Yeah, I got to an overwhelming state, and I just brought up one morning at breakfast possibility of a corporate bankruptcy, and the look on Mick's face, I had never seen that before. I watched it just slowly wad up like a piece of tinfoil, and with the most disgusted look, he went on to explain that people had worked hard and skimped and saved and put some money aside in hopes of a better tomorrow and entrusted that money to us, and all we have in this world is our word. And we're going to make good on every penny of that. And he made it loud and clear. He did not want to have that conversation a second time. Mm-hmm. And I realized I've got some work to do. And looking back, I am absolutely thankful I took that road. I feel good about myself. I know that nobody lost their hard-earned money. It was a big sacrifice on my part. It took almost 2 years to clean that mess up. But everybody was made whole and worked out good.
The bigger picture, then, a question I really hadn't intended to ask, but real important who you choose to be in business with.
Absolutely.
That is the most important thing. If you are going to have a partner, I suggest you treat that business partner like you would looking for a spouse, looking for a life partner, that and their circumstances and needs are extremely important. And one of the first tests I have, I get approached for a lot of partnership deals. I do very, very few of them. And I ask a lot of questions, but also where are they at financially? And is there desperation in their life? The last thing you want to do is climb in bed with somebody that's got a lot of problems, and they're going to be your problems.
Absolutely. Tony, what was the main lesson you learned living through the down market of the early 90s?
Well, the first thing I learned was that when I went through bankruptcy, I actually didn't have to go through bankruptcy. I learned that, unfortunately, coming out the other end. I didn't feel very sure about myself when I was going through that. So what I did was I went and then spoke to attorneys, and attorneys give you advice that's based on where their fee's going to come from. So, you know, you go see a bankruptcy attorney, he's not going to tell you not to do it, you know. I learned that there's other ways of handling problems sometimes, but the fear factor takes hold, and you start looking for a way to get away from this feeling. You don't really look at it logically. So I learned that was a huge lesson for me to learn, because I had never really identified what is it within myself that would lead me to go here or go there, you know, go chase this or go chase that. Even chasing after deals, you know, if the only reason you're chasing after deals is because you're afraid of whatever it is, whatever fear is telling you to do, eventually you're going to find yourself pretty much losing whatever you're making, because that you can never satisfy that feeling, regardless of where it's coming from. But I learned to kind of take a step back, and that's where I started setting goals for myself when mm-hmm. I came out of that whole process. I was very careful to set specific goals so that I knew the reason why I was going to do this new thing. Why was I going to take this on now? I didn't want to do it like I did before. It was all about craziness and money, and all this money's coming in, and it didn't matter, you know, how much money I brought in. I wanted to find that point of equilibrium for myself, and that makes you really analyze who you are and what wealthy, you know, what that word really means to you. Mm-hmm. To me, I found I landed on peace of mind. There was nothing else. If I can have, I mean, I got an Avalon. I love my car. I kiss it. I mean, I just love my car. You know, and the fact that it's riding on a Lexus chassis, and it's got a Lexus motor, and it's got a Lexus everything. My brother bought the Lexus 400. He calls me up to brag about it. I said, I don't know what you're bragging to me for. I got your car. The only difference is his says, good morning, Tony. Mine doesn't.
Mike likes his truck. It's probably got 300,000 miles on it. But
first, it has 414,000 on it. I'm nobody without that truck.
Right. But I mean, you know, the difference between my brother's car and me is he paid $30,000 more for his. So just so he could say good morning to him, and the steering wheel adjusts itself. I mean, give me a break, you know. So you just have to. When I came out at the other end, I came out with a very good sense of who I am and what this business was about to me. It's what it was, and I understood what it was not going to mean. It's not my identity. In other words,
okay, Mike. Last minute and a half. What was the main lesson that you learned?
Probably the biggest one is, this too shall pass, that everything has its time under the sun. If I hang in there, that it would eventually go away. I learned the power of goals, too, that I was determined to clean that mess up, persistence and determination. Realized how powerful those were. But I also realized how important it is to figure out who you really are, what it is you're out to accomplish, try and follow your true north and be true to yourself. And like Tony had just said, I'm not real estate either. I've always looked at real estate as a means to an end.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That in my world, that's exactly what it is, a means to an end.
You and I had a conversation one time at lunch, and I got decent at real estate buying, and it led me to my passion, which is teaching. So that's everybody takes it, and we'll talk about it in the next segment. You know, you guys have journeyed into the training arena, and but for me that's very rewarding, is trying to figure out the statistic stuff and see if we can conclude things that help people. And one of the things you mentioned that you watched during that down cycle was Mick cashing checks from rentals that seemed to make his situation a lot better than others.
That was one of my goals. Duplicate Mick's cash flow.
Okay. All right, guys, thanks for joining us, and we will pick up this discussion in the next week.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.